Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Dude Therapist. We have Rachel Wright on, who is an LMFT and is a distinguished psychotherapist and renowned speaker with expertise in modern relationships, mental health, and sex. Her mission is to help people live happier, healthier lives by providing insights and practical advice in a relatable and engaging way. Rachel is also a seasoned educator and coach, having created the virtual workshop series, What You Wish You Learned in School, Sex Ed, and co-produced and hosted a show at Green Room 42 in New York City called One Night Stand, A Night for Sexier and Healthier Broadway. She was also Shape Magazine Sex and Relationship Coach and is currently one of the MindBody Green's article review experts. As a widely recognized mental health and relationship expert, Rachel has been featured in numerous media outlets, including The New York Times, Pix 11, Women's Health, Cosmopolitan, and NBC News Radio, among others. Rachel's personal touch, sense of humor, and deep empathy make her the perfect guide for anyone seeking to improve their mental health, relationship, sexual well-being. When she's not working, you can probably find her in her pajamas, eating gluten-free food, and belting out show tunes. Connect with Rachel on Instagram at @Wright_Rachel or visit her website, rachelwrightnyc.com. She's a good friend of mine. We talk often. We text, check in with each other. Someone who I value in their opinion, in their viewpoint, in their humor, in their laughter of life and realness that they talk about on social media as well as on this podcast, someone who I admire and truly respect. So I'm so excited to kick off as one of the earlier episodes in season 5 of 2024, Rachel Wright. Let's get right into it. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Dude Therapist. We have a colleague, a friend, someone who we talk outside of this platform. And I was on her show and I'm so excited to have Rachel on because it's been a long time coming and a lot of good back and forths and rescheduling. But that's what we do for friends. We show up, we're patient, and we wait for the opportunity when it's right. So Rachel, I'm super pumped to have you on. Can you introduce yourself to the people, the listeners, whoever might be tuning in today, so they get to know a little bit about yourself?
First of all, thank you for that. Thank you for having me and thank you for your patience. 2023 has been a wild year personally. And that, as we all know, can trickle into work. And sometimes it does that, and that's okay. I'm still learning that that's okay, but it's okay. My name is Rachel Wright. I am a licensed marriage family therapist. I am a sex educator. I write and consult for a lot of different companies and media outlets. I have a podcast myself, as you mentioned. It's called The Right Conversations, play on my last name. And I am non-monogamous and queer and live right outside New York City. And I'm originally from California. What else? I have celiac disease. I love theater. And I'm a big kid at heart.
So we're very similar. We're both big kids. Yep. I got Crohn's. You got celiac. From New York. My wife's from California. You know, we have some connections there through California. And it's just so, and we both work in relationship world. Yeah. And it's just so interesting the different things that we see. I have to ask a silly question.
It's probably not silly, but go for it.
First of all, I'm so jealous of people who have names that fit their podcasts. Like Claire Tuning is a dietitian and it's called like her podcast is Chew Something. And you're like The Right Conversation. Like I'm Ellie Weinstein. Like what? Unless I'm like, let's wine together. You know, maybe I should have done that. Let's wine together and just be like,
that'd be pretty good.
Oh, honestly, gosh. Screw the Dude Therapist. Let's wine together. There we go. New podcast. Just me. Solo podcast of me whining about life. Right? Reel up my heritage and alley of life. You know, I'll just chew Seinfeld and just curb your enthusiasm and just whine about life as a therapist.
Oh, I mean, I can thank this is still so weird to say. I can thank my ex-husband for my last name. My maiden name is Gibbs, and that does not lend itself to what anything. Gibbs? What do you mean? Oh, like, ha-ha! That'd be funny. See, I didn't even get it at first. This is where we are. When I took his last name, some of my like more, not more feminist, but like deeply feminist friends were like, you know, you don't have to take his last name. And I was like, yeah, but Wright is so much cooler than Gibbs.
Wright is not and, like, wrong.
Yeah. And like, there are so many ways we can play with this last name. And little did I know that, you know, years later, I would have a podcast with the name.
I gotta look
title.
Into the wine files. Maybe I'll do that.
That's
but
fun.
The question I have for you is, you know, I don't know if you feel this way, but working in relationships, do you ever walk away from a session or sessions and be appreciative of your own relationships, or does it make you look at your own relationships?
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that in the same way, I haven't met a therapist that like hasn't had some sort of mental health thing for themselves, or didn't have parents or a close, you know, family member with a mental health thing. I think that we are interested in things that are reflected in our own lives. And I always wanted to understand relationships more, and of all kinds, right? Like romantic, sexual, familial, platonic, at work, like all relationships just fascinated me. And so certainly, yeah, I see things happen in session or themes that kind of continually pop up and will either have gratitude because it's something that, you know, I have worked through or improved on, myself, or, you know, we'll look at and be like, oh, I do that. I've done that. And, you know, it's definitely not something that I think about super consciously, like while it's happening, because I'm just so present in the session with people. But afterwards, you know, if I'm taking a note, or if I'm just reflecting, or at the end of the day, if I'm kind of like replaying my day, absolutely. Yeah. I learned so much from my clients.
Yeah.
Both individuals and couples.
Yeah. I remember when I used to work at a clinic, in the beginning of my marriage. It was a very intensive treatment, and all walks of life coming through my doors. And I would come home and be like, I love you. I'm so happy. Please don't leave me. You know, like kind of like experience. Mm-hmm. And there are some days where I'm like, you know, I just heard someone say something and it really like struck a chord with me. Do I do X, Y, and Z, or is that something that I do? And yeah, like it would open up conversations. And it's such a fun thing. And I think that, you know, the beautiful thing about you and what you do on social media, and I know you do this in real life, which is represent your true self as best as you can, right? Some days easier than others, of course. And it's so interesting. And I'm really enamored by this idea that therapists recently have been opening up about their true selves. I have anxiety and ADHD. I have Crohn's. I struggle as a father and a parent and husband some days.
Yeah.
Most days, right? Because let's be honest, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's hard. I get into arguments with my wife. I scream at my kids sometimes when I get frazzled, but I'm also great at what I do at the same time, depending on the day. And it's so interesting how that has been so attractive for clients and other people looking for validation. When we were in grad school or learning, it was like, stop it. Don't do that. Where the line? Or how do you find that line of oversharing and being, and not, I'm not talking about HIPAA, I'm not talking about ethics, I'm not talking about that, but where is it too much where it's like, you don't need to post a picture of your poop or a picture of, you know, your meal to show that I'm a human?
Yeah, it's a great question. First of all, I want to name that, like what you said about what we were taught in grad school still plays in my head sometimes. I started sharing about myself online before it was something that was more accepted amongst other therapists. And I started doing it when I was still an intern. And I had supervisors that were like, you can't do this. And I was like, you can't tell me what to do outside of a client session. Like that's not how this works.
Yeah.
Like I'm not breaking any ethical codes. I'm not, you know, I'm not taking up space in a client session with my own stuff. I'm not bringing that into the work. What I'm doing is, in my time outside of those containers, sharing about myself so that people can A, know that I'm a human, B, normalize certain things. I think that there are a lot of projections towards specifically therapists. And I think that this is starting to go away, frankly, due to a lot of people sharing. But there are a lot of projections or ideas that, like, therapists have it all together. And this continually came up a lot, like, with people that I would talk to. And like, oh, you're a therapist. You probably don't deal with XYZ, you know? And I'm like, bitch, I just had a panic attack 2 hours ago and then fought with my partner. And then, like, no.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have found that there are people who are really drawn to it. And there are people that are like, I don't want to know anything about my therapist. And both of those things are really valid. And there are plenty of therapists out there who don't have an online presence. And like, that's cool too. But where I figure out how to draw the line is, and I was actually saying this to you right before we hit record, is this share of service? Why am I sharing? And really trying to get in tune. And I certainly don't nail this 100% of the time, but really trying to get in tune with, what am I trying to accomplish with this share? And not that everything has to have a clear, like, goal or outcome, but even just, is this of service to someone who would read it? And if the answer is no, or if I can't really pinpoint why it may be of service, I might lean towards not, and then maybe like experiment with sharing something like that once and see how it goes, and then alter from there. But it's to me, it's about being of service and normalizing being a human. And if I can help normalize the human experience, in addition to then normalizing things that are stigmatized, right? Like mental health, non-monogamy, kink, like a lot of these things that are still stigmatized in our culture.
Yeah.
Then I feel good about sharing. And that's where I try to draw the line.
Yeah, I know, I love that. And sometimes, I don't know if you struggle with this, but with my ADHD, sometimes I get ahead of myself with my thought process. My brain moves sometimes a lot quicker, or my dreams or my hopes or my things kind of spiral ahead of me more than reality can either dictate or let me appreciate, which sometimes gets me in trouble within my head of like getting down or frustrated or annoyed that it hasn't happened yet, or why hasn't this happened? And, you know, when I'm like 10 years already thinking of 10 years from now. And my wife is someone who really, when I check with her, because she's a very grounded, logical person. And so I'm like, is this too much to share? Do I need to share this? Is this something that would help benefit people? And she's like, sometimes she doesn't want me to share because that just sounds uncomfortable. Not that it's inappropriate, but like, no one needs to know that. Or like, she wouldn't share that, but that makes sense for me.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
She's the person who, like, I was just saying to you before that we went to Katy Perry last night for our anniversary, and like, I'm up and singing and screaming, and she's like, and I'm like, you know, like, and I'm like, I'm the nutso between the two of us in that, you know, the silliness level, but she can keep, you know, her own in that way. But I think sometimes we can't do it ourselves, and it's good to have those people around us. You know, for you, you are someone who really has broken a lot of barriers on social media when it comes to the openness of non-monogamy. And I know your thing is like and, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the and, either the and symbol or the and tattoo. Can you tell me a story about what and is all about?
Yeah. I mean, so clinically speaking, it comes from this idea that two opposing things can be true at the same time. You know, we can be happy and sad. We can be excited and terrified. We can be mad at someone and love them, right? Like, things that a lot of people would assume are opposites or are in fact opposites. And this idea that they can't both be true simultaneously. That's where it comes from clinically. But I use it in two other different ways. The first one is to replace but. And I, for anyone listening, I encourage you to ask yourself what would happen if you replaced your buts with ands. And what happens when we hear but is like the first thing, anything that came before the word but, we're like, okay, that part wasn't very important. This like last part after the but is what is actually true. And most of the time, what we're trying to say is exactly what I was saying before, which is like these two things are true, right? So yeah. Like, I'm hungry, but I don't want to eat right now because I have a podcast. I'm hungry and I don't want to eat right now.
Validates both.
Exactly. So switching that out is huge. Where it comes in with non-monogamy is more of a replacement of or. And monogamy poses this, it's this person or this person. And it's really interesting because I recently just retaught for a community organization my like non-monogamy 101 part one, the basics, like fundamental workshop. And we were talking about this, and I was reminded of this societal acceptance of the fact that friends are always ands. It is societally acceptable to have multiple mm-hmm. friends, right? Mm-hmm. We are friends with Jane and Kelly and Tom and Ellie and Rachel and Ashley. We're friends with all of these people, and no one is like, but doesn't that take away from your other friendships? Or don't you get jealous of your friends? And it's like, well, sometimes I prioritize this friend over this friend, depending on need. And certainly sometimes my bandwidth is full and I can give less here and But no, it doesn't inherently take away, right? We've societally accepted that it is quote unquote normal to have more than one friend. And so the and of we don't have to pick, we're not picking one friend. Like, in fact, if somebody says, I only have one friend, we're like, do you want to make more? Like, can I help you in that
Expand
process?
Your horizon.
Right. But with romantic and sexual partners, societally, it's the opposite. If we say, you know, I have two partners, people are like, what? How do you do that? And, you know, a lot of times my answer is like, do you have more than one friend? Because like, yeah. it's a very similar mechanism. And so, and for me in non-monogamy is this reminder of I can have my cake and eat my cake. Yeah. I can have Ashley as my partner and I can have Yair as my partner. Mm-hmm. I can have my family, my two partners at home, and I can go date outside of them if I so choose. It's this more abundant, non-scarcity type mindset of and. Mm-hmm. And of course, that doesn't take away from, again, things like bandwidth, priorities, seasons of time where things may shift. But fundamentally, that's what it's about.
I love that. I don't think I've ever heard anyone put that into perspective. This is why I love, you know, your thought process and your mindset and what you talk about as well. As I'm so excited to have you on, because I don't think anyone's ever said that out loud. I've never heard someone say that out loud, of the idea of friendships. Like, no. And yes, we do get jealous of other friends. Sometimes we compare other friendships, of course. Yes, we might not be sleeping together or having romantic feelings for each other, but no one's like, what? You have 15 friends? What's wrong with you? Are you sick in the head? Like, right. No one says that. So when it comes down to, and this might be a longer conversation, it might hit home or like touch a nerve. Is the reason for society's pushback on this out of fear, Or is it because of like Judeo-Christian religious things? Or is it like all of the above? So yeah. I get the Judeo-Christian worry, right? That people might have, you know, it might not be considered whatever values that people might hold dear to their heart. Okay, you do you. Yep. The fear, I think, is misguided in the fact of it's unknown. So how do we deal with it? Do we have a schedule? Is it Monday, Wednesday, Thursday with one person, and then Tuesday, Friday, Saturday with another? And Sunday is just a free-for-all, and we just like roll the dice and see who I hang out with. You know, like, how does it work? I'm very impressed I got all the days right. You know, I thought it was, yeah, you know, I got all the days.
Yeah,
thank you so much. I went to kindergarten. And for you, and I would love to hear this, is the power of communication is something that I think, and I'm not talking about logistics, but the fact that we do it. It's not how you do it always, but that the fact that you are doing it. How does that communication work regarding boundaries, rules, quote unquote, or regulations, or think the way that you guys run? How often are you guys talking to each other when it comes to that comfort and understanding of where one ends and one begins for each other's safety, happiness, and joy?
Almost every day.
Wow.
And what I find in all of the ways that you just said, I think that something that monogamous folks can learn from non-monogamy is that because our society is mononormative, there are a lot of assumptions about relationships that are just there because monogamy is the norm in our culture. So there isn't a lot of communication around relationship agreements. There are a lot of assumptions around relationship agreements, like, oh, well, we're not sleeping with other people now. Mm-hmm. Okay. What does cheating mean to you? Like, that's not a conversation that a lot of monogamous couples have, because
they only have it until something happens.
Bingo. And you're like, you cheated on me. And they're like, that's not cheating. And you're like, oh, we've been together for 7 years and have never had this conversation. Mm-hmm. And in non-monogamy land, these relationship agreements, which is the word that I would use when a lot of people use the word rules. And the reason why I use that word is because rules are set for by other people, and agreements are consented between people. And these relationship agreements are cultivated from the beginning. So it's, what are we comfortable with? What do I want to ask for? Okay, I asked for this, my partner's not comfortable meeting me with my full ask. Where can we compromise? And keeping like a written running list of agreements that you then say, okay, so we're going to put into place this agreement for a month. And in a month, we're going to come back to it and reassess. Because especially for a monogamous couple that is opening up their relationship and transitioning into non-monogamy, their agreements at the beginning of that process are going to look really different than their agreements, you know, 3 years into the process. Yeah. Because we grow and we get more comfortable and we start trusting things and being like, oh my God, remember when I was like so uncomfortable with like you coming home past 9? That was so silly. But at the beginning, if it gives us comfort and we both agree to it, that's wonderful. And so that's part of why these conversations happen all the time, is because we are constantly growing and changing and evolving, and we want different things. And, you know, I'll give a personal example. When Kyle is my ex-husband, when that breakup happened and he moved out, he was gone, and I could not handle either of my partners hypothetically starting a new relationship with someone for a bit. I didn't know what that length of time was going to be, but I knew that I was going to need extra TLC. I knew that I was going to need extra stability. I knew that I was going to need extra presence. And I knew that I simply did not have the emotional bandwidth to deal with new feelings of jealousy, new fears, new anything. It was like enough new. My cap for new was full. Mm-hmm. And I was aware enough to be like, I cannot. Mm-hmm. And so what I did was I came to them and said, can we make an agreement for the next 3 weeks? There's just no one new coming around in the mix. And they were both like, yeah, of course. Yeah. And so 3 weeks later, we talked about it. And I was like, I think I need one more week. They were like, great. And, but that, the ability to, the self-awareness that we need to have as individuals, right? Like if I had not checked in with myself, then what would happen is they would continue to go about life as normal, according to our traditional agreements. They then go out with someone new, or one of them goes out with someone new. I'm at home and I'm like a total bitch, you know, when they get back, like, I can't believe you left me at home. And they're like, what are you talking about? Like, this is what we all, right? And so, but this happens a lot. And this happens a lot, even more in monogamous couples, because these relationship agreements are not explicitly discussed or come back to or worked through. So we talk about stuff all the time and we check in constantly. And how are we doing as individuals? How are we doing in our dyads, like our two people relationships? How are we doing as a three? Are we having enough time as a three-person relationship? Have we had enough, you know, intimate time? Have we had enough emotionally intimate time versus physical? Have we, you know, done something fun, like gone mini golfing or, you know, to a show or a movie or whatever? And we're just constantly in communication around all of that stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, I love everything you said, and I can dive into like 18 things that you went into, but I think the biggest takeaway for me, you know, really is the idea of checking in. It's something that I constantly push with my clients. And I'm not a pushy therapist. That's not who I am. I'm a no BS therapist. So I'll sell it to you straight. And I'm not going to beat around the bush. And I'm not going to ask how you feel. You know, how does that make you feel every 5 seconds? But I'm going to be, you know, real and honest with you. And the biggest thing that I promote and talk about often with my clients, especially heterosexual monogamous clients that are the quote unquote societal norm of today, always check in every day. And I do this in my own life. This is not something that I just preach and don't do. Either every night or every morning, I check in with my wife and say, hey, what do you need for tomorrow? What can I do for you? She does the same for me. Now, usually I'm the one who starts the conversation because it's just where my brain's at and I'm more talkative in that way. But it's that constant check-in, like, hey, what's on tap for today? What's going on today? It's not a schedule like, oh, I have this. It's how can I help you? What do you want to accomplish today? When we're about to put the kids to bed, it's when the kids are going to bed, what would you like to do? Oh, she says, I would like to watch Bachelorette and then take a bath. Great. How can I make that happen? I'll be on the kids. So if someone wakes up, I got them. Vice versa, right? We do it for each other. Yep. And it's also just a check-in. And I had a rabbi years ago. You know, I'm Orthodox Jewish. Anyone who listens knows that I'm a Orthodox Jew. And I had a rabbi years ago when we were getting married, one of my close colleagues, someone who I truly love, who's like a normal guy who I go to for anything and everything religious, said, I want you to make something called an import-export list with your wife. I'm like, what the heck is that? Sit down and talk about what do you want to import from each other's lives and what doesn't work for you. And just now, right now, in this scenario, and every anniversary, take the list out and check in on the list. That's the minimum requirement of checking in on the list. You know, we made it now, you know, we're recording on my anniversary, 8 years. And it's really great that we married for 8 years and we love each other and we're growing. And there are days that we don't like each other and we got kids and we went through IVF together and I got my Crohn's and her pregnancy, like everything going into our relationship, you need to check in, because if you don't, you're going to fail your relationship and in turn lose a person that means a lot to you because you're not checking in with them to see how they feel about the status quo or the standard that has been set from last year that might not work this year or yesterday that might not work today. And, you know, something that, you know, I dabble working in the LGBTQ plus community, not purposely, people just reach out to me because relationships and relationships across all types of human beings. And it's a beautiful thing to be in relationships. It's also very scary when the standards of yourself change from the norm that you've always had. And a question I've been wanting to ask you, because that little voice in the back of your head that tells you, this is not, I don't feel myself. This is not fully me. How do you embrace that? How do you fully embrace that with the fear and potential shame or worry of backlash from other people? And this is not a coming out question. This is more of, how do you embrace your full self and love yourself to choose you for yourself?
Oh man, this is like a whole podcast episode in itself.
I guess I have to have on you again.
I guess so. This is such a hard question. I think that the first thing that popped into my head when you said this is taking the time to actually figure out what that voice is trying to tell you. Mm-hmm. Because nothing helps get rid of fear of other people's judgment than confidence in who we are or what we're saying. Mm. And when we do not feel confident around who we are or what we're sharing about ourselves, it's much easier to take in someone else's judgment and start questioning ourselves. But if we feel or know or are 100% or 99% or 98% confident in who we are and what we're saying, mm-hmm. and what we're sharing, someone's judgment is just that. It's theirs. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like it can bounce off. Like there's this bubble around us of, I know who I am. Like that's what makes up the bubble. And so someone else is like, well, what about blah, 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 or that's a blah, 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 or like insert judgment here, as they like toss it at you. It just kind of like comes back and like hits them in the head. But when we're not sure and we're wobbly and that bubble isn't there, it can hit us in the face. And that's okay, right? Like, we're not going to always be 100% confident or in the 90s, especially at the beginning of something as we're figuring mm-hmm. something out. But that awareness of, okay, I'm not entirely sure here. And so someone else's judgments or biases or ignorance may hit me on the face, and that might not feel great, and I might doubt myself, and that's okay too. And I'm going to use that to reflect and ask myself, what was it about this judgment, or what was it about this statement that hurt? What didn't feel good? Mm-hmm. And using that as almost a catalyst for deeper understanding of self, to then get even closer to that self-assured place, to where the mm-hmm. things can bounce off. That's the first thing that pops in.
For someone who said that was a hard question, you answered it perfectly and beautifully.
Thank you.
So I guess you know what you're doing. I guess you know what you're doing. Maybe, you know. No, but it's just such an interesting thing, because when the people around you are so used to a certain you, and that shifts.
Yeah,
and there's something that I have been saying often since I interviewed Vanessa Bennett and read her book, It's Not Me, It's You, mm-hmm. That I just find it's so integral to like my thought process for myself. And I just need to share. I want to share it like with anybody, everyone. It's like, we all evolve. So this till death do us part perspective, or this locking someone into a certain view. Right. Again, my anniversary, I can't look back at my wedding day and go, I need you to be that. I can't expect that. That was 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. I'm different. She's different. Everyone different. From 6 months to 2 days from now to, you know, 3 years from now. And I remember when my daughter, when my son was born, and I look at my daughter who's three, and I look at my son, I go, you were that, but now you're this. What? It blew my mind, right?
Yeah.
We all evolve. We all grow, and we're all changing. Mm-hmm. But if we lock ourselves or other people into a set box of what they are, and never allowing them to shift, pivot, or grow for their own benefit, right? I'm not talking about our benefit, but just for their benefit, if we don't let that perspective go, right? We all have parents who are like, I remember when you were a teenager, and, you know, and they hold you in that teenage mentality and still talk to you that way. And I lived with my parents for a year and a half before we moved to Vegas. And that was a huge struggle of mine. And I'm surprised my parents are still alive and I didn't kill them. But, you know, that all being said, we sometimes hold ourselves into that perspective where we don't allow ourselves to grow and we don't allow ourselves to evolve because how could I? I expect myself at here. Whether that's your physical health, whether that's your mental health, whether it's your sexual orientation, your religious beliefs, your values, your ethics, morals, whatever, your political views, we are allowed to evolve and grow. And I think that we're so scared to allow ourselves that of what it might open. So, you know, and after my TED talk here, the question I have for you is what has been some interesting positives and maybe some doubts or concerns, but I want to hear more of the positives because that's what we're here to do is have positivity, but also realness, right? Like, what are some of the positives that happened when you allowed yourself to break that boundary and like embrace evolving and growing?
Oh man, everything.
I mean, I know that
that's thank you for being here.
Goodbye. I know that that almost sounds like a cop out answer, but it truly everything. Like, I think that one of the biggest shifts for me, was the decrease in my anxiety. And having this realization that a lot of my anxiety, not all, but a lot of it was coming from this place of exactly what you were just describing, which is like, people know me as ABCDEFG, fill in the blank, and I have to continue to be that rather than allowing myself to grow and evolve with the awareness that I was gaining about who I was and what I wanted. You know, there, of course, is anxiety associated with change too, but it's a really different type of anxiety than from stuffing who we are down inside of us and not letting ourselves grow.
Ooh, it got me really emotional on my face. The idea of the stuffing down. I think that's such a, you know, a real image of like hiding our true self.
Right. And then we wonder why it comes out sideways and, you know, anxiety, depression, panic attacks, like, cause like we're not being us.
Just a quote, a really great, if you've never read his work, Dr. David Burns, Feel Good Therapy or When Panic Attacks, he comes from a very, anti-medication perspective of treatment of anxiety. And panic attacks, which is not for everyone, of course, you know, there's a mix and match for every single person. His books are pretty like kind of dense, so take it and leave it with the, you know, the parts that you enjoy. And he has this line when panic attacks that really helped me when I went through my panic attacks when my daughter was born. And he says, we process so much throughout the day that if we hide everything and you shove everything under the rug, your room is still dirty. You just can't see it, right? It's like taking everything and throwing it under in the closet. And you're like, oh, where's that shirt? And then 3 years later, you're like, oh, I found my shirt. Right. And I think our job as therapists and mental health professionals and honest, I think people who are honest and truthful to ourselves as best as we can, is to help people open their closet, take things out and look at it and see, does this service me? Can this help me? Do I fold this or do I hang it? Do I burn it? Do I throw it out? Do I give it to charity? Right? Yep. That's what we're doing with our thoughts. That's what therapists do with people. It's not that we're here to drag out the process to gouge you for money. There's just so much that we deal with, you know, on a daily basis that sometimes we need someone help to organize. We are organizers of people's minds. And it's not that we are geniuses, it's that we're objective to see your closet in a way that you can't. And if we don't clean out our closet, that's my metaphor for therapy, by the way. I use it a little too often, but But if we don't clean out our closet or clean under the rug, it comes to bite us in the ass. And we don't know how, we don't know where, we don't know when. But if we don't clean ourselves out, we don't be true and look under the rug and just look at it and see what's there and know where your skeletons hide and know where the dirt is and know where your that shirt that you've been looking for 4 months. And you just know, you don't have to do anything with it, but you know where it is and you can deal with it on your own time and your own comfort level helps clear up the tension. And, you know, one of the reasons my wife and I moved out to the West Coast was that tension. Just a different acceptance here, a different level of comfort and freedom. I mean, I used to wear like button-down shirts and slacks every day. Now I wear t-shirts and shorts and I don't care. And I wear crazy colors because I got really into Fabletics and they have really awesome colors. Shout out to Fabletics. We're not sponsored, but if we are, I really hope we can get sponsored by Fabletics because I wear their stuff and buy a little too much of their things. Love would it. Help my bank account a lot. But you know, in the last minute or so, because I know you have a beautifully packed day with so much things that you're doing to help so many people. I don't want to steal their time of yours. And, you know, we'll talk outside of this because we know, we text all the time, so it's okay. But if you can give some advice, whether it's straight up relationship advice or people who are going into the world of non-traditional relationships. Mm-hmm. What would be one to two takeaways of you think that people really need to hear that they might not be hearing from someone who is knowledgeable, awesome, kind, and caring like yourself? Oh, and if you want to hire me as a hype man, I'm always available.
Will do. Truly. Okay. First thing is take the time to both learn about these things and do the self-reflection. So the learning doesn't mean that you have to take action on it. Mm-hmm. Like no one is trying to convert you to non-monogamy. Trust me. In fact, it's like the opposite. Like it's really no one wants you to be doing something or be in a relationship design that you don't want. Mm-hmm. That doesn't serve anyone. And learning about non-monogamy, which by the way existed long before monogamy did, is not going to convert you. So learn about these things and you might be surprised as to what you figure out about yourself, even if that doesn't necessarily change your relationship design. So that's the first thing. And I think the second thing is that words like normal, I know you and I used to describe like societal norms, right? Like mononormative, heteronormative, the social norm, blah, blah, blah. And I think that while that is super accurate and I use those and there's not a better word for it, I think that the implication is that there is something abnormal or weird about things that are outside of that. Whether that is a sexual orientation that's not heterosexual, whether that's a relationship orientation or design that's not monogamous, whether that is a job that is not, you know, a traditional type job or whatever the thing is that is outside of the cultural social norm, it's not weird. And I want to encourage anyone to figure out what comes up for them when they hear that. So like when they hear social norm, when they hear mononormative, like does that create any internal judgment or biases towards your own interests or desires? And are you applying this like subconscious, okay, well, if it's not the norm, then it's abnormal. So that means I'm weird. When like really how it's being used is this more of like objective description of like the norm in our culture right now is this, just like the norm in our culture many years ago before colonization was non-monogamy. Mm-hmm. Like monogamy was the abnormal thing or the not societally normal thing.
Yeah.
And so just ask yourself, like, do I have any of those internal biases that pop up? Yeah. And give yourself some compassion.
I love that. Thank you so much for being here, you know, and being a friend and someone who I know I can turn to if I need something. And I hope you feel the same. We have have you on like 80 billion more times.
Sounds great.
Oh, yeah. I could talk to you for hours about this stuff. It's just so powerful and so beautiful. So where can people find you to learn more about what you're up to and what you're doing?
Instagram is the best social platform. I pray every day that they're not going to like take my account down for talking about sex, but, Instagram right now is still in existence. My handle is @the_right_Rachel, and that's right with the WRACHEL. And then my website is rachelwrightnyc.com, and my podcast is The Right Conversations. And you can find that on all podcast platforms.
Well, Rachel, thank you so much for being on today. I really appreciate you.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of Dude Therapist Season 5. Can you believe it? I can't. What a journey. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whether it's your first episode you've listened to, or you've been a follower since the beginning, or just trying to catch up, I appreciate you. Thanks so much for really jumping in on this awesome opportunity and learning experience. You know, if you have any questions, ask them. You have thoughts, say them. I didn't finish a thought, or you have more ideas of what you would like to hear, just let me know. The door is open, so to speak. So please walk right in. Tell me what you think. Again, thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Dude Therapist, and hope you tune in next week.